Chapter 15. Now when Nicanor learned that Judah's party was in the territory of Samaria, he took counsel to attack them in all safety on the day of rest. But the Judeans who were forced to follow him said,
"Do not massacre them in that way, like a savage barbarian, but show respect for the day which the All-Seeing has exalted with holiness above all other days."
But the thrice-accursed wretch asked,
"Is the one who has ordered the keeping of the day of the Sabbaths a ruler in heaven?"
Now when they replied,
"It is the living Lord himself, the ruler in heaven, who has commanded the observance of the Sabbath day,"
he said,
"But I, too, am ruler on the earth. I order you to take up your weapons and carry out the king's counsel."
Nevertheless, he did not succeed in carrying out his cruel plan. And indeed, in his utter boastfulness and arrogance, this Nicanor had determined to erect a public monument of victory over Judah's party. But the Maccabee was unceasingly confident, with full hope that he would receive help in exchange from the Lord. And he urged his men not to be terrified of the nations, but to be mindful of the help which they had received from heaven in the past, to expect that now, too, victory would be given them by the Almighty. And by encouraging them with the law and the prophets, but by also reminding them of the battles which they had already won, he made them even more eager. And having stirred up their fury, he transmitted a message, at the same time pointing out the perfidy of the foreign nations and their violations of their oaths. Now he had fully equipped each of them, not so much with the safety of round shield and spear, as with the encouragement of good accounts. Then he cheered them all by relating a trustworthy dream, a waking vision worthy of belief. Now what he saw was this. Honiah, the former chief priest, a beautiful and good man, modest indeed in appearance, but gentle in manners, also distinguished in speech, and trained from childhood in every excellence, was praying with outstretched hands for the whole Judean body. Next, in the same way, another man appeared, distinguished by his white hair and dignity, but with a marvelous and magnificent eminence about him. Now Honiah said,
"This is God's prophet, Jeremiah, who loves his brothers and fervently prays for his people and their holy city."
Now stretching out his right hand, Jeremiah presented a gold longsword to Judah. But as he gave it to him, he addressed him,
"Accept this holy longsword as a gift from God. With it, you shall crush your opponents."
Now encouraged by Judah's beautiful accounts, which had power to instill excellence and stir up young souls with good manliness, the Judeans determined not to delay, but to charge gallantly and decide the issue by hand-to-hand combat with the utmost courage, since their city and its temple with the sacred vessels were in danger. For though they were concerned about their women and children, also their brothers and kinsmen, Their first and foremost fear was for the consecrated inner sanctum. But those who also remained in the city suffered no incidental anguish, anxious as they were about the battle in the open country. And everyone now awaited the decisive moment. And their enemies were already drawing near. And with their army drawn up in battle line, and their elephants placed in strategic positions, and their cavalry stationed on the flanks. The Maccabee, contemplating the multitudes before him and their elaborate weapons, and the fierceness of their elephants, stretched out his hands into the heaven, invoking the Lord who works miracles. For he knew that it is not through weapons, but as the Lord judges, that victory is won by those who deserve it. Now he invoked him, saying,
"You, O Lord, in the days of King Hezekiah of Judah, sent your heavenly messenger, and he killed 185,000 men of Sennacherib's army. Sovereign of the heavens, send a good messenger now to spread fear and dread before us. By the might of your arm, may those be struck down who have blasphemously come against your holy people."
And indeed, with these words, he ended his prayer. Now Nicanor's party advanced to the sound of trumpets and battle songs. But Judah's party engaged their enemies with invocations and prayers. And contending with their hands, but praying to God with their hearts, they laid low no less than 35,000 and were greatly gladdened by God's manifestation. Now when the battle was over and they were joyfully departing, they discovered Nicanor lying there in his full armor. But they raised shouts and tumult, and they praised the ruler in the language of their fathers. Then Judah, who was ever in body and soul the protagonist of his fellow citizens, and the man who from youth had maintained his goodwill toward those of his nation, ordered Nicanor's head and whole right arm to be cut off and carried to Jerusalem. Now when he arrived there, and had convened those of his nation, and had stationed the priests before the altar, he sent for those who were in the citadel. And he showed them the polluted Nicanor's head, and the insulter's arm, which had been boastfully stretched out against the holy house of the Almighty. In cutting out the tongue of the impious Nicanor, he said,
"I will feed it piecemeal to the birds, but I will hang up the other wages of his folly opposite the inner sanctum."
Now everyone looked into the heaven, praising the Lord who manifests himself, saying,
"Blessed is he who has kept his own place undefiled."
Now Judah hung up Nicanor's head from the citadel, a clear and evident proof to everyone of the Lord's help. Now by common vote, it was unanimously decreed never to let this day pass unobserved, but to celebrate it on the 13th day of the 12th month, called Adar in the Syrian language, the day before Mordecai's day. Therefore, this is how Nicanor's doings ended. And from that time on, the city remained in the possession of the Hebrews. So I will bring my own account to an end here too. And if it is indeed well written and to the point, that is what I wanted. But if it is poorly done and mediocre, that is the best I could do. For in the same way that it is harmful to drink wine alone or water alone, whereas mixing wine with water makes a more pleasant drink which increases delight, so a skillfully composed account delights the ears of those who read the work. But let this be the end.